This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Wearspace.com. That's WEARSPASE.com. These are purveyors of some really cool t-shirts that represent the various plant medicines, as well as some other stuff. Check them out. Go to Wearspace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new badass shirt. And any money that you spend on these shirts, 5% of the proceeds goes to various organizations seeking to get these plant medicines into the bloodstream of people who need it, such as MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. All right, here we go. I'm recording this episode from Asheville, North Carolina. I'm here visiting my family. I'm about to head to Hendersonville to play a game of Monopoly with my brother, his wife, my stepdad, and my nephew. So this might be the last you hear of me, because there's a likelihood the whole thing could erupt into some kind of bloody brawl with such intense violence and anger that it spreads out from the house like some kind of terrible radioactive wave rolling into the Blue Ridge Mountains, incinerating all the trees, burning up all the animals, and leaving North Carolina a smoldering wasteland filled with lumbering radioactive rage zombies breathing hot black fire out into the sky. The beams coming from the mouths of these demonic zombies will intersect and form a pentagram, which will shoot an iridescent rainbow over America, from which a million Donald Trumps will emerge and attack the remaining human beings on this planet, devouring them and forming one massive Donald Trump, which will shit out a giant Zika virus-laden mosquito, which will inject its proboscis into the planet and cause the planet to give birth to a new, slightly deformed Earth. So that's probably going to happen. If you're hearing this today, that just means the game of Monopoly hasn't started yet. I'm going to jump right into this podcast only because I'm in a hotel and I want to go walk around North Carolina. This is where I grew up. It's beautiful here. I can't believe how happy I feel being back here in North Carolina. And of course, my brain is actively contemplating ways that I could manage to live here. I mean, it's not rocket science. I know I could live here, but how do you do it? Is it possible? Do I become bi-coastal? Ugh, I don't know. But I do love North Carolina. All of you in Asheville, maybe I'll see you when we're walking around. Tweet at me and let me know what's stuff to do around here. The place is incredible now. What happened? It's beautiful. I mean, it's always been beautiful, but now it seems to have really, I don't know. We had like gourmet drinks at some fancy French-like bar last night. Sovereign Prospects or something. Some beautiful handcrafted phosphate brew made by a handsome gentleman who seemed to have teleported in from the early 30s. It's incredible. Beautiful place. Go to Asheville. Everyone, come here. All right. Well, I guess that's not much of an intro. I really like this episode that you're about to listen to. This is I had a kind of breakthrough from this episode, from what Aubrey was talking about, and I don't want to ruin it, so I'm just going to let you listen to it, but, I feel like I do want to ruin it, because he was, God, I don't want to spoil the thing, but you know what? He's going to describe it better than me. The synopsis of the thing is the concept of the sun. Think of the sun. This beautiful, glowing, incredible, perfect, life-giving orb floating out in space. The sun doesn't care about compliments. The sun doesn't care if it's doing a good job. And the sun doesn't care if it's shining its light on monsters or on saints. It's just an ever-giving superorganism out there in space. And then that idea that Aubrey talked to me about made me start thinking about ways that I could be more like a sun, ways that I could be less selfish, ways that I could give more. And if you start thinking about yourself as a sun instead of as a hungry, attached, all-devouring black hole, then you realize that, maybe you'll realize, I realized that a lot of the shit that was bothering me had nothing to do with my life or people around me or situations, and everything to do with my inability to give more than I was giving. The answer is always to give more, generally. That's the paradoxical cure that you hear about in the ever-quoted and much maligned book, The Secret. The idea being that if you want more, give more. And it seems ridiculous. It goes against everything that we understand about the way that stuff works generally. It's not, if you output more energy, you don't get more energy back. It seems like it breaks the laws of physics, or it goes against our my understanding. I like talking about the laws of physics. Nothing more ridiculous than a 42-year-old acid head talking about the laws of physics. But I'm going to do it. It seems, from my very vague, blurry, kaleidoscopic understanding of physics, that putting out more energy should not get you more energy than you put out. In fact, this is the dream of modern civilization. If we could find some kind of engine that brings in more energy than it puts out, then we have perpetual motion. And that idea of perpetual motion has driven inventors crazy forever, because if somebody could figure out a way to create an engine that doesn't require more energy input. This is actually, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, and I don't know what happened to it. I got really excited about it because a few months ago there was all this ridiculous talk about a brand new engine, like a microwave engine that theoretically created thrust from bouncing microwaves inside its like conical interior of this weird device that someone had invented. The idea being, in space, there's no friction, no resistance, so that if you produce just the smallest amount of thrust, and if you can do that without having to bring fuel, then theoretically you could have a kind of hyperdrive on your spaceship, and over a few month period, just tiny, minute bits of thrust will get a thing in a place where there's no friction, no resistance, going super fast. I don't know what happened to that. A lot of people said it was a bunch of bullshit, but my point is this. Perhaps there is a kind of metaphysical, perpetual motion machine that exists inside the human heart. And if you start experimenting with outputting more energy instead of taking more energy, if you start experimenting with giving more than you think you can give, give away that fucking thing, whatever it is. You know the thing? You've definitely got the thing laying around your house, something expensive that you never use. But for some reason, you keep the thing and you look at it because you think, one day I'm going to use that thing. Well, if you experiment with giving that thing away, watch what happens. And the more you start giving away those stupid things, and you've got all kinds of those things inside of you, you've got all kinds of these compliments laying around inside your brain that you're not dispensing because you're waiting for the perfect moment to dispense the compliment, the kind word, the smile, the hug, the phone call, whatever it is. You're waiting. In the attic of your potentiality, there are all these moldering, mildew-covered compliments, smiles, waves, happy gestures, gifts of a phone call that you aren't using because you're waiting for the perfect time. And they're up there in your brain attic, gathering dust, being chewed on by the demon rats of your soul. Well, get them out of there. A painting sitting in an attic is doing nobody any good. Just try it. And then you can start experimenting with becoming a human sun. And the sun, I think, if it could gaze upon the earth, which I think it does, I think the sun must look at the earth and be constantly astounded by the effect that its output is having on a formerly dead planet that used to float around it, covered with some kind of warm, briny, dead sea. To see the thing spring to life must be incredible for that sun. And I think in the same way, if you experiment with becoming a sun, you might notice that formerly dead parts of your life, relationships orbiting you, your job, whatever it may be, will suddenly begin to grow tiny little tendrils of hope, of potentiality. And then the more you keep giving out, you will maybe witness all of this new stuff coming into your life. Stuff that you never possibly imagined. I know. This is the secret. I know. And the secret deserves to be put on a wall, and New Agers should be placed in front of it and poisoned so they projectile vomit all over the book. It's a much reviled book, and there's all kinds of problems. But I'm telling you, man, after this episode with Aubrey, and when I started experimenting with some of the stuff he was talking about, I think I had some kind of semi-breakthrough. So there you go. That's all I have to say about it. Just listen to this man. He's incredible. He's done the work. He's been out there in the jungles slurping back that bitter doom brew for over and over and over again, and it clearly works. It works. I've seen him transform. So there you go. We're going to dive right into this podcast, but first, some quick business. Today's episode is brought to you by Aubrey Marcus's Badass T-Shirt Company. The website is www.wearspase.com. Aubrey has whipped up these awesome shirts. I go to the gym, believe it or not, I'm always going to the gym, and I'm proving my theory, which is that I am a robot incapable of any kind of true physical change and destined to always be chubby. But I still go to the gym, and I'll keep doing it just to shake my fist in the face of whatever God created me fat. Also, I love to eat sweet things, and I eat pizzas at night. So that's the real reason. The point is, I go to the gym, and, you know, I never get complimented at the gym. Ever. Except once. The only time I've ever gotten a gym compliment that I can recall. Actually, maybe twice. But the first time, I think, that was nefarious. The guy asked if he could walk me to my car and said he liked my shoes. But it seemed weird. But the second time, at Equinox, somebody complimented my shirt. And the shirt that I was wearing was a shirt designed by Aubrey Marcus from wearspace.com. He's made these shirts that represent all of these plant medicines. And the one I was wearing was the representation of ayahuasca. It's got a madre written across the front in big, thick red letters and a crazy skull-like thing on it, which I think must represent Mother Ayahuasca. And the skull aspect, I mean, I don't know exactly the symbolism behind this, so forgive me, Aubrey, if you're listening to this, I'm completely fucking it up. But Kali, Mother Kali, as she's called, is sort of a representation of the Divine Mother in a kind of destructive form. So you see Kali, she's wearing, she's just got a very ferocious visage. She's wearing a necklace with the heads of the gods. She's destroying humanity. It seems terrifying at first until you realize that Kali represents the force in the universe that rips away from you all of those things that you have become unnecessarily attached to. And so Ram Dass even recommends, if you've got an aspect of yourself that you're tired of, if you're an angry slug person who's hissing at the wind, then you could offer those aspects of your personality to Kali. Well, ayahuasca is known as the vine of death, And if you've listened to other episodes with Aubrey and listened to him talk about what happens on an ayahuasca trip, quite often you have to die. And I imagine that the more you resist that, according to many people I've talked to who've taken ayahuasca, the more difficult the trip can be. So here we have Madre, Mother Ayahuasca, the skull representing that aspect of the trip where you finally allow yourself to die, which really is just getting out of that shell. I'm sure that there are hermit crabs who have shells that have grown too tight for them, who are terrified of climbing out of the shell into a brand new, sparkling, beautiful shell. In the same way, lots of human beings are terrified of climbing out of that old, musty ego carapace that's grown around their heart chakra, and so they would rather live in a tiny bachelor pad ego mechanism than experience the very temporary rending apart of that useless and pointless callus that's formed around their ability to experience pure autonomy and freedom. That's my interpretation of what that shirt means. There's also writing on the inside of each of these shirts, which Aubrey has written. He's a great writer, and this writing describes what each of these shirts represent. The point is, they're cool. And if you go to wearspace.com, that's WEARSPASE.com, you can see all the designs. And if you use offer code Duncan, you're going to get 10% off of these shirts. Here's what else is super cool about these shirts. Every shirt has a specific charity attached to it. So a minimum of 5% of the proceeds go to charities like MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, which is seeking to make MDMA prescribable, which it's sad that anybody has to seek to make a drug that has the potential to cure PTSD and a great many other problems prescribable. But that's the dimension that we live in right now, so we just have to deal with it. These shirts are, the premium line of these shirts are custom made in Italy. And if those shirts are a little too pricey for you, check out the Austin Fit line, which is a little more affordable, and they are printed in Austin, and those are only $28.50. Will you guys please go check this out? Aubrey, as you're about to see, if you've never listened to an episode with him, is one of the coolest people on earth. So anything that he's creating is definitely worth a little bit of your attention. And he's sponsoring this episode of the podcast. So check it out, won't you? Okay, everybody. Oh, yeah. Before we get going, very quickly, we're also sponsored by Amazon.com. Use our portal, which is located in the comment section of any of these episodes. You don't need to leave your house. If you are terrified of the Zika virus, ISIS, if you're terrified of meteor impacts, hailstorms, if you just don't like the way your neighborhood smells, if you're just in that space where you've been eating edible marijuana and yet you desperately need some kind of video game console and you don't want to go to Best Buy to get it, you can go to Amazon and you could have, depending on what city you live in, if you use Amazon Prime, you could have a PlayStation delivered to your house in 2 hours. It's glorious. This is the golden age of the shut-in, friends. And if you're going to go to Amazon and buy plastic stuff, why not go through our portal located at duncantrussell.com in the comments section of any of these episodes. I just bought a Bluetooth guitar thing, which actually I don't like. So don't get that. But there's a lot of other cool stuff on Amazon. And, there's literally everything on Amazon. Unicorn, sphincter cream, you name it. You can find it. But do go through our portal first, won't you? Also, I'm going on tour of the East Coast, a bus tour, the You Are God tour. And all the dates are listed at duncantrussell.com. That starts in late March and goes for a full month of glory. So check that out. I'm going to be everywhere. I'm going to be in Asheville. I'm going to be in New York. I'm going to be everywhere. Nashville. Check it out. Go to duncantrussell.com. Grab tickets because they're going fast. And I think that's it. Okay, fine. That's it. All right, everybody. Now, today's guest is not just the founder of Wearspace.com. He is also the founder of Onnit, which is a vitamin company. I don't know if vitamin company is the right word for it. Sports enhancers? I don't know what you call it. But it's the dispenser of one of my favorite supplements, Alpha Brain. And I don't think Aubrey agrees with its description of Alpha Brain, but I'm going to say it. It reminds me of low-level Adderall. And I know a lot of people who love this stuff. If I've got to do a podcast, I need to focus. I will gulp down 3 or 4 Alpha Brain tablets. I think that's more than the recommended dose, but fuck it. It's fantastic, and I have to do more than the recommended dose because my brain needs more. And they're wonderful. Anyway, they're fantastic, and they give you crazy fucking dreams. And I've verified that with other people as well. So I don't know what it is exactly that it does, or really what's in it. You can look all that up. I just like the way it makes me feel. Aubrey's company makes a lot of other cool stuff, crazy workout things, kettlebells with ape heads on them or zombie heads, battle maces that you work out with. These are, you know, a lot of you guys that are out there are super in shape, and this stuff probably appeals to you. It appeals to some dormant part of me buried under all this pizza residue. The idea of being in a home gym lifting zombie heads and swinging massive battle maces around while roaring at the sun sounds glorious. I'm not there yet, but I've seen this stuff and it's super cool. Battle ropes, heavy ropes. If you could go out in your backyard with one of these big heavy ropes and just swing it around, swing your zombie head kettlebells and throw the kettlebells into your neighbor's yard. Just do it. It's one of my recommended exercises. Anyway, not only is he the founder of Onnit, but he's also an author, and he is I want to call him a shaman, though I don't know if that's the correct term for what he is. I don't really know what he is. He's an enigmatic, super cool fella. Who every time I hang out with him, I find myself learning something more than I knew before. You can find out everything you want about him by going to aubreymarcus.com. AubreyMarcus.com. Now, everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, my dear friend, Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey, welcome back, man. Thanks for coming out here all the way from Malibu to Pasadena.
My pleasure, brother. It doesn't sound like that much of a struggle when you say all the way from Malibu. You know, you don't get a lot of street cred for making that drive when it starts in Malibu, but
dude, I'm somebody who deplores traffic. I'm weak, so I don't like traffic. Traffic freaks me out in the most extreme way. And so if anyone takes a long time coming here or goes through traffic, I consider it to be a great honor.
Well, I mean, it's my pleasure.
It's not like you want, in the old days when you went to visit someone, you'd wander down a forest trail and there were dangers.
And
for
you had
sure.
No time. You had no time to meet. You had no watches on your hand. So it was like, yeah, when the sun is highest in the sky.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there soon.
Yeah, a lot of waiting.
Yeah, Uncle Jim's coming. When? Soon.
Soon.
Could be a
this
month,
week.
6 months. And then when people came to you, they'd stay for a long time. Yeah. They wouldn't leave. That was I remember my grandparents telling me how there used to be, you know, there weren't highways. There was you had certain mile markers and you would make a right turn at a mile marker and a left turn at a mile marker. And it was traveling across the United States, if you weren't going by train, was a real serious endeavor. And it sounds so fun and beautiful. But the point is, it took so long to get to a place that once you got there, you'd stay. If someone came to visit you, you would be like, all right, see you later. Yeah. If you traveled 30 days to get here. Just stay a week. You would stay months and months. Right. It's kind of cool, man. I like that.
Or taking a boat across the Atlantic to visit your relatives.
Yeah. You know,
like, you're going to fucking stay for a while. Maybe a year.
Maybe forever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Time was different back then.
Yeah.
Isn't time... Time is different now. Like, the way that we approach time is very frightening in a lot of ways. The effect of it is... You know, I was thinking, man, what do you think of this? We worship two false gods in this world. And, you know, in the Old Testament, God hates more than when somebody worships a false god. Mm-hmm. Like the old Jehovah spirit, mm-hmm. he gets so pissed. If you're worshiping the wrong god, he freaks the fuck out. But so the punishment from the universe for worshiping false gods is very extreme. And that means anytime you are allowing yourself to plug into a delusion, you're going to suffer.
Yep.
So the two false gods, the past and the future, right?
Right.
And you realize all of society is built around the worship of these false, non-existent states.
Demons.
Demons. Mm-hmm. Demons.
Yeah, that's the classical definition from the shamanic perspective of a demon. What is a demon? A demon is a delusion. Somehow, in some way, it is a delusional idea, concept, archetype, thought. It's something about it is not reconciled with truth. And those are two things that certainly aren't. You know, the past, at least the dwelling on the past or the dwelling on the future. I mean, there is obviously the actual past and future, which are abstract kind of thoughts. There's something that's happening soon and something that's happening past, but identifying with those, like through your personal history and attachment to them, and then thinking about the future to take you out of the present, because the present is where truth lies,
right?
For sure.
Well, that's the Lord.
Yeah.
And when you look at, you know, the funny thing about the past and the funny thing about the future is they're like, to prove the past exists, you only can use imprints of the past. Like you can use pictures, mm-hmm. neurological encodings of which we call memories. But there's no way to get, like, scoop out matter from the past. It's gone.
Yeah.
Instantaneously annihilated in any given moment. And then when you look at the future, obviously there's no fucking way that you can prove the future. We can't, there's nothing you can do. You just have to believe in the future because stuff happens. But really, it's a delusion. And that shamanic concept, it seems that if you really wanted to incur the wrath of God, then you would allow your society to be built upon the whims of two false gods.
Yeah.
And this entire society, the whole world, functions on the concept of the past and the future.
Yeah.
Even talking about it right now, people are like, you've got to have the goddamn future, you fucking hippie shit. How are you going to run anything if there's no future? How are you going to do anything if you don't remember the past? How do we put someone on trial? There's no justice without the past, you know?
Right.
But then you see someone on trial who's done some awful thing, and you witness them, and you realize that's not the same person who committed the crime.
Yeah.
And you see in the look in their face where they're like, I was in a dream. I don't know how I got here.
Yeah, it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, and it's, no man steps in the same river twice, because it's not the same river and he's not the same man.
Yes.
Heraclitus said that.
That. Now there. How do you have industry?
It's hard. Our society's built upon these precepts, but always there's the choice that we have to just anchor to the present moment. And in that present moment, there can be pain, but there cannot be suffering. It is not possible.
Whoa.
There can only be just the pain. And pain is very easy to deal with. We're very good at that. Suffering, which is our feelings and fears and concerns and worries about the future and all of these things. Like, imagine when you have a cold, you know, like, so much of a cold is not the physical symptoms of your stuffy ass nose. It's projecting into the future about this cold and these things that you're doing. But if you just anchor to the present moment, you got a little bit of a stuffy nose. Like, not a fucking big deal.
Not a big deal. All.
Not a big deal. Even if it's even more, like, you know, something a lot harder. Anchoring in the present, you know, you're with the truth of what's actually happening, which is maybe a little bit of pain, maybe some pleasure, maybe whatever else is going on. But there's always that volitional choice. Which is, I think, one of our, you know, main choices of free will is to just anchor to the present, clear the mind, anchor to the present, and you'll alleviate 90% of your suffering.
Now, this is an interesting thing that you've said here, because it gives us
a compass or a canary in the coal mine to determine whether or not we're in the present moment. Because sometimes you think you're in the present moment and you're not in the present moment at all because you're thinking you're in the present moment.
Right.
That thing, you know, where you're like, it happened to me the other day. I was just driving down the, I was just driving to a, to go eat dinner. And I was like, ah, you are so in the moment right now.
As you pat yourself on the back.
Totally not
comparing yourself to the past of not being in the present moment, patting yourself on the back.
Not in the moment at all.
Right.
As far away from the moment as you could be. This is the, this isn't the, another demon. This is another delusion. Is this terrible thing that will perch on your shoulder and say to you, oh yeah, you are really, really right there. You really are. Like, oh wow. This is amazing. This is like your Bodhi tree moment, man. Your awakening as you drive to this pizza place. You really, no, not even close. Because you're thinking, and then you start thinking about like the, how you're going to articulate the beauty of the moment. Right. Like, you know, that's the next
talking about it on a podcast or putting it in a blog.
Or, and then you think, I will say that there are two false gods. And then you say it.
Right.
But you're still not there. And so this canary in the coal mine that you're talking about is, one way to identify that you're not in the present moment is if you're experiencing suffering, as you say, versus pain.
Right.
Now, help me understand these two things. What is the difference between suffering and pain?
Yeah. Suffering is the extra piled on top anguish to the physical stimulus that you're feeling. You know, so like whatever you're going through, whether it's, you know, physical or emotional, there's a direct physical stimulus that's happening, some kind of issue that's going on somatically within the body, right? That's all that, that's all that the present moment allows. It allows stimulus to be kind of washed over that present moment. And then the suffering comes from all of the mental kind of maneuvering that goes around that, thinking, projecting into the future, how is this going to affect me? How long am I going to be this? When am I going to get well? What do I have to do? What did I do to cause this? All of those things are the suffering, whereas just if you're at peace with the stimulus itself, the stimulus is often very little. No matter what, no matter what you're going through, we're very adept at dealing with the stimulus. I mean, think about the when you get a shot or something like that. I mean, the suffering comes from the anticipation of the prick.
Right.
You know, and also, you know, whatever, mostly the anticipation in that instance. But
that's
when
right.
it actually happens, it's like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Nothing.
And it's over in a minute, and
it
it's
nothing.
Not a big deal at all. But the suffering comes in the projection towards the future. And then, you know, potentially if it was traumatic, you can think, you know, in the rear view and look back at the event and have suffering about something that happened in the past. But in the present, you can look at yourself and ask your body, you know, am I all right? Or as Castaneda, that crazy fuck, said, you can ask death. You can say, death, have you touched me yet? And death will say no, and you'll know you're all right.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
It's so liberating. And
it
it's so blasphemous. That's the other thing I like about it is many people, I think, when they consider the present moment, do not realize how revolutionary a state it is to be in.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think the times when I really manage to get there or where it just happens, the moment I realize I'm there, I do get this feeling of like a prisoner who's wandered out of the prison and is about to get abducted again by the cops. Like, I'm breaking rules. You're not supposed to feel okay right now, man. you can't just feel good.
And there's that voice when you do feel really good that says, hey, be careful, motherfucker. You're feeling really good. That means the fall is coming.
Yes.
You know, this the fall is coming voice is one of the nastiest demons we all have in our head. I feel that all the time. Like, everything is so amazing. It's like, watch out, motherfucker. What's next?
Yeah.
You know, keep your eyes out. And I think there's some wisdom to the what the Stoics call premeditation of potential disastrous events. But then you got to let that go. You do what you got to do and then just let that shit go. And anchor back to the present moment where that pleasure lies.
Yeah, that's right. But and that other demon that you're talking about, it's the demon of the future. It's just some.
Yeah.
It's like I was thinking, okay, these demons that we worship, the false gods. And then I was thinking, okay, you know, in like the grimoires, like the Lesser Key of Solomon, and the various like weird books about how to summon demons. Which are so...
No, I don't know those, but I'm interested.
Oh, check them out. They're awesome.
Yeah.
They're awesome. The whole... It's called... oh, fuck. There's a name for it. oh, I'm going to say it wrong. I mispronounce everything. The Goetia, it's spelled G-O-E-T-I-A. But basically, this is the idea that there are elemental forces in the universe that you can, if you are a clever magician and do the right purification rituals and then the appropriate summoning rituals, and then you could theoretically control these forces. And so there's a lot of theories about the various grimoires and where all this comes from. The best being that it's a pre-flood technology, that it's the remnants of a pre-apocalypse technology that still lingers and no one really understands it. But many, many like powerful Western sorcerers are really into this shit. And Crowley being one of them. And I know other people too who claim to have made contact with these beings. But when you, it's really fascinating when you read like the Lesser Key of Solomon, because you'll have the demons, the main demons, and then they'll have servants, or they'll have like legions beneath them. Like any, there's a hierarchical, in the same way, if you look at like certain old texts on angels, there's a fascinating hierarchy in angels where there's higher angels and those angels have servants and those. So it's like a weird celestial corporation. So past and future, these demons, they have a legion of workers underneath them, and those make up all the other sufferings, right. You know, all the little things, you know. But so still what you're talking about, it's still like if you are not in the present moment, you will suffer. This is interesting because when you hear the Buddhist idea, life is suffering, the cause of suffering is attachment, it's a little more difficult to understand for me. Like attachment to what? And what do you mean? I know what you mean theoretically, but this is, to me, right to the point, which is
exactly,
if you are not in the present moment, you're going to suffer.
Present moment is hallowed ground. Like, this is hallowed ground. Like, all of those Warcraft and wizardry movies, you know, where do you go for hallowed ground? The fucking present moment. Demons cannot touch you in the present moment.
Nothing
can touch you in the present moment. I mean, someone can harm you physically, obviously, in the present moment. But as far as these constructs and archetypes of the mind, and for people who have difficulty looking at these demons as entities, you can just look at them as archetypes. You know, these forces that are these coagulations of archetypal thoughts and influences that are coming at us. You don't have to necessarily accept that there are entities that are, you know, drinking blood and doing whatever they do. Whatever helps you kind of organize those thoughts, I'm all about. And I don't try to get caught up into whether they're, you know, a lot of people ask, are these entities real or are they just precepts of the mind? Same fucking thing. Real Same or precepts thing. Of the minds. It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But doesn't what matters matter. Is how you deal with them and absolutely. And I write about it in the book that I'm releasing here pretty soon. One, the best way to escape to truth, you know, which is obviously away from all delusion, away from all the demons, is anchoring to the present moment. So what do you do yourself to anchor to the present moment? Like, what are some of the techniques that you use to get there?
So the techniques that I was taught this, I go to these Ram Dass retreats. They're the best. And you have the thing I love about them. When I first started going, I was tripping out to like see someone like Ram Dass talk, because the vibe that guy puts out is just, there's nothing like it, man. But then you realize, oh, it's like, that's just one tiny little piece of it. Cause what starts happening in these retreats is you have this, you know, ecstasy talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a never ending ecstasy conversation minus the ecstasy. Yeah. Everyone's so opened up that they're just like talking, and then you know that thing where like, the universe will talk to you through overheard conversations sometimes, or the way you get, it's funny the way people's filtration mechanism works is because they think that they can only take in information if it's being directed to them from one person to them or from a book to them. But no, the universe is teaching you in the way the wind blows through the trees, or a conversation you might overhear in line at Staples, or it's always talking. You can open it up. So then that stuff starts happening, or the universe just teaches you. So this, man, I wish I could remember his name. He's the coolest guy ever. He's somebody whose job it is to administer. He helps people relax before big surgeries in hospitals. So his job is to come in if someone's like got some big thing going down. He teaches them how to get calm. And so his technique that he taught me is so simple, but I use it and it works, which is like, you can do it right now. You just feel, if you're sitting in a chair, notice, here's something that you don't have to worry about, holding yourself up. That chair is going to hold you up. No matter how you sit in the chair is supporting your weight. A lot of people, they over-effort when they're sitting because they don't feel supported by the universe. So if you're sitting in a chair, you actually realize, like, the way your muscles are working is as though the chair is suddenly going to collapse or something. You know, like, right. You're doing the chair's work. Right. You don't need to. The chair's holding you up. You're fine. And then the other thing you do, so you sink into wherever you are, whether it's a bed, a chair, and you realize, like, oh, yeah, the chair is going to do all the work. I'm on vacation for a little while as far as gravity goes here. Yeah. So then you can feel your muscles relax. And then you feel your feet in your shoes, if you're wearing shoes, and feel the way that your feet are sinking into the earth. And just doing that for me will get me right there. Mm-hmm. That'll do it for me. Simple stuff like that. But then my problem, or meditating, following the breath in and out through the nose, yep, will get me there. But, you know, it's like the interesting thing about all of this stuff is you don't know that you've been there until you're not there anymore.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I had this mushroom trip recently where all of a sudden, I'm sorry, you guys, I talked about this in an earlier podcast, but it applies. As I was coming down from the mushrooms, I started thinking, because I'd just been in this realm of pure symbols, you sure, know, just this beautiful, like the, you know, that's, that you're just like, I don't know, just like face it, beautiful faces and incredible, like, you know, you're seeing the, like, the weird, dewy, spider web, like, tendrils of the sentient, non-embodied consciousness that spreads over everything and the way it's always expressing itself. And but suddenly I was like, wait, I was doing this. What was I doing? I was doing this thing, man. What am I doing? I'm this thing. I'm a human. Oh, I'm a human. Oh, shit. I'm a human. Oh,
I'm humaning right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, but before that, to come back to remembering I was human, I was not I was not me.
Yeah.
And so I came back into myself again and remembered, oh, I'm doing this project called Human for a little bit of time. So in the same way, the present moment, it's like that kind of like, when you're there, this is where you get into the, and this is where, I'm sorry, this is a very clumsy and stupid rant, but this is where you get into the whole problem that Zen addresses, which is like, we're talking about a thing that the moment you're talking about the fucking thing, you're not in the thing. Or maybe you are, but more than likely you're not. So
for me, I think, and I think that's what you're just about to ask me probably, but for me, yes, I think it's the most pleasurable state that we can get in. And I think we access it sometimes without even knowing it. I think sometimes when we have sex, we're in the present moment. And that's one of the most pleasurable aspects of sex. And I think the kind of field of Tantra is built around that, is using that as a tool to help you access the present moment. But I even think, like, even sometimes,
do you practice Tantra?
Like just scratching the surface. It's on my list of like areas of expertise that I need to explore, but enough to understand like the basic premise and know that it works. Like I basically have proved the concept by just scratching the surface enough to say that that is a method that'll work.
You've had the extended orgasm?
No, I've stretched it, but not the tantric, you know, 5 minute, the full thing that they...
A philosophy professor at our school claimed that he could have 6-hour orgasms with his wife from Tantra.
Yeah. I mean, that's that would be pretty rad, but, you know, the only time I've had a really extended orgasm feeling was on DMT a few times. I've had that where it just stretched out for like 5 minutes or something like that. But yeah, so sex is one way. And I think actually even there's certain conversations and certain times where we're more in the present, like that first date, you know, a lot of times where you're just enraptured in somebody. I think one of the reasons why we like that is because it forces us to be in the present, where with people we're familiar with, we're running these background discussions and thoughts in our head. We're thinking about our phone or what's next or whatever. So I think interactions with people, of course, flow state is another one of the classic examples. And flow state is accessed when there's generally when there's stakes on the line. So you have some kind of risk, like you're surfing a big wave is kind of right. The classic example, where that wave will absolutely pummel you. So to access your highest performance, you have to be in the present moment. You have no room. There's no wiggle room to be thinking about this or that.
This is Alex Honnold.
Yeah, just have to be in the zone, 100%. And Stephen Kotler wrote a book about flow state, and I think that's really an interesting way to access it. And then, of course, there's the other kind of meditation techniques, one of which is Tom Brown's, he talks about it in The Sacred Silence. It's called Awakening Spirits, and he has this sacred silence meditation that I really, really like. He has a couple methods. One method is out in nature. He uses the widest peripheral gaze that he can. So he's looking at everything but nothing at the same time. So just relaxes his eyes and sees everything without focusing on anything. So just pure perception at that moment.
Right.
And the stories of what he's able to see, like if he's looking at a wooded landscape, you know, and we're looking at a wooded landscape, like what he's able to see just because he's cultivated that ability to just perceive life and all of everything at the same time without thinking about it is pretty legendary. So that's one method. Another method that he has is he goes through this meditation, and I actually, this is the guided meditation I have on my website because I like it so much. But he goes through this guided meditation that'll get you to access the present moment. And then at the end, he launches what he's called a trigger breath. So that's a breath where you breathe in, and then you breathe out really slowly. Keep breathing. And you'll start to feel your heart like palpitate as you start to lose breath. And you'll start to feel your pulse. And when you start to feel your pulse, it's just this kind of unique feeling and unique way of breathing. And what he does is after the meditation, he has you do that breath so that you're anchoring. So that breath is synonymous with being in the present moment. So it's kind of like a Pavlovian response that you can build, right? So then the idea is you do the sacred silence meditation enough, anchor that breath at the end of it when you are present, that no matter what you're doing, all you need is the breath to remind you of the present moment. So it doesn't work until you've patterned it, but eventually, like the bell that causes the dog to salivate, you know, when there's food there, all of a sudden you can pull away the food, just have the bell, and you'll get the salivation.
That's cool. Classical conditioning classical into the present moment.
Exactly.
Badass. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Yeah, that's super cool, man. Yeah. All these techniques are so important. And this is, you know, the thing, the more I experiment with this present moment, and it's a fun, it's like a romance almost, man.
Yeah, where you start, it's a dance, because you can't stay in the dance. And dancing is another great way, talk about a way to do it when you're really just dancing and like that kind of ecstatic dance or enraptured dance moment where you're just feeling your body. Yeah. It's another way to access the present moment, a great way. But it is a dance in general, not literally but metaphorically, because you're in and out of it at all times. And just,
it's a new friend, and it's a perpetually new friend.
Right.
And it's like, so sometimes when you're having a difficult moment, you can think, oh, I'm going to visit my new friend and see what happens. Yeah. And then there it is, this wild thing. Now, if you embody the present moment, it has characteristics. The present moment is the ultimate revolutionary. The present moment does not care about the machinations of society.
No.
The present moment doesn't care about the president. The present moment doesn't care about the government. The present moment doesn't care about money. The present moment doesn't care about anything that humans are caught up in. And this is the...
The present moment cares about the taste of the juice of the pear as you're biting it, and it's dripping down your beard, and it's flooding your mouth with the sensation of pleasure. That's what the present moment cares about.
Yes, that's it. And it's wild,
yeah.
You know, because it cannot be domesticated.
Yeah.
Because it seems like domestication requires this kind of like a feeling of what will happen in the future if you do the wrong thing, or punishment for the past. The present moment will not be domesticated. So it is an undomesticatable, super rebellious being. And I think it's like, if you look at the, not the fundamentalist Christian version of Jesus, but like the hippie version of Jesus or whatever that being represents, that it's best articulated in that being. And all the stuff that Jesus says in the New Testament that I choose to pick, and by the way, I just do a filter system, man. If there's shit in there, then I'm like, yeah, that doesn't, my Jesus would never say that. I just take whatever I want. But all the stuff that I, you know, like things like do not store your treasures on earth where the where rust
low tide.
Yeah, don't store your treasures in earth where rust and moths will corrupt. Store your treasures in the kingdom of heaven. Or like, you know, Jesus is always talking about the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, build your castle upon the rock, not upon the sand.
Yes.
The tide will get you, something like that.
That, yeah. Well, yeah, well, or like the concept of the kingdom of heaven. Again and again, yeah. If you read the New Testament, definitely read it, everyone. Revisit it. It's awesome. Just take a psychedelic. You'll get it. But there's always this reference to this thing called the kingdom of heaven, which Jim Baker has transformed into a celestial place with, you know, the streets of gold and blah, 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 where you get to watch the sinners burn in hell through special televisions or whatever. That's like that. But the kingdom of heaven is something he keeps referencing, and I'm certain it's the present moment.
Totally.
Because when you enter into the present moment, you are in the kingdom of heaven. You are in heaven. And so Jesus is always saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Mm-hmm. Or like they're always trying to trick him. So they'd ask him questions like, what about, you know, I don't remember who they're mentioning, like John the Baptist or whoever, is he in heaven? And the response is like, I am the God of the living, not the God of the dead. It's super fucking cool. It's like this idea of this present state. Anyway, man, the point is, this thing that we're talking about, if you have been raised by hippies, or you've heard it over and over again to the point where your ears are bleeding from assholes yapping about the present fucking moment, it's the most boring sounding place ever. I know I used to think that. It's the last place you want to be. Some boring, docile, sedated state. That is not what it is.
It's the opposite.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, it's alive and enriched with all the sacred geometry of the universe coming in and crashing against your perception.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, totally.
No, that's it.
Did I ever tell you about in ceremony, in one of my last ceremonies, my encounters with the Jesus and Lucifer archetype?
No, I don't think you did. And if you did, I still want to hear it again.
Yeah. So I was in ceremony and in a very safe container, this awesome container called the Medicine Space that my friend Hamilton Souther has kind of created, where you anchor your heart to kind of the heart of the universe. And it's this amazingly...
This is in Brazil?
No, this was not in Brazil. This was in the States. But it's this amazingly like high vibration, high frequency place that you can anchor to. And it's very, very safe. And so in that container, we were exploring different archetypes, and we started exploring the Jesus archetype. And I was able to see this as this emerald column, this spiraling emerald column of this glowing light. And it was this really amazing experience, because I don't have a lot of, you know, Christianity roots or anything like that. I've been pretty much agnostic concerning Jesus. I know he said some very wise things, 100%.
Sure.
But for me to encounter that archetype, and what it really was it was a force that was saying, like, show me all your worst. Show me all your demons. Show me everything that you think is bad about yourself. I'm not even going to flinch.
Right.
I'm still going to love you.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing you could show me that'll make me go, ooh. You know, it's like, I love you all the same. What is it? What is it? What is it that you're hiding? What's that deepest thing that you're ashamed of? Show that to me.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
I love you.
That's it.
But it was this impartial thing. It wasn't like he was trying to, or it was trying to dig that out of you, or it had judgment about it. It's like, I'm here. Anytime you need absolute 100% love and forgiveness, just come find me.
That's it.
You know, I'm not motivated to try. This is your choice. If you want this, come find me. You know, and that was just this cool thing, because you have this missionary idea of Jesus that the religiousness of it all has kind of perpetuated. Like, yeah, we got to go fix the sinners and we got to go convert people or they're burning hell. Like, the actual entity that I encountered was like, no, I'm here if you want love and forgiveness.
I'll hold down
that end of the spectrum. And then on the other side of the spectrum is the opposite. And this was the force that, you know, biblically would be called Lucifer. And this is the force of ultimate resistance. And that allows the cosmic duality to exist. That allows the tension that creates this game of free will. So on one side, you have the Jesus archetype. On the other side, you have the Lucifer archetype.
Tell me about that archetype.
So that archetype was really interesting, because I realized that the game could not exist without that force of resistance. Without an equal force of resistance to the force of good, people would get enlightened like this.
Right.
There wouldn't be actual free will. You wouldn't have a game where your choice mattered because it would already be tilted in one side or the other. It has to be a perfect balance.
Right.
And the Lucifer archetype, I envisioned it as this, it was this swirling, chaotic black. It had no light. It was just like the absence of light, just this black, swirling, brown, void, chaos spectrum. But really, one thing that struck me is that that was a force that willingly chose to hold down that archetype so that this game could exist. So that was a force that was doing something, doing that out of love for humanity at its very basic root. It was like, I love humanity so much, I will be the force of resistance that everybody hates. I will cause all this pain so that we may have free will, so that we may have a game to play.
Right.
But, and then so I got started getting this sympathetic feeling like, oh, you know, thanks. And then there was this voice that came through really, really clear. It's like, but don't get it twisted, motherfucker. I take this game for real.
Yeah.
You know, I could take this game seriously. I will fuck you up. Because that's my job. Like, don't think we're friends. Like, just because I love you enough to do this and to hold this down doesn't mean I'm going to put my game aside and not try to fuck you up.
Right.
You know, because that's what that thing is. That is, you know, the source of the delusion and resistance that allows us that gravity, you know, that force pressing against us that allows us to ascend and allows us to have the opportunity to choose pleasure and choose enlightenment and have this interesting game.
That's right, man. Yeah, Lucifer, the light bringer. Mm-hmm. I love thinking about Lucifer. The contact I had with him, it was on LSD. And again, you guys, well, I'm not going to do any more disclaimers. Fuck it. If you want to think I actually think I saw Lucifer, I don't care. But I was laying in bed on LSD, staring at the stucco ceiling, a fantastic thing to gaze upon when you've taken the right amount of acid. It's beautiful. You'll see the entire, all mythology in front of you. You'll see everything. But I was looking and I saw this beautiful male figure with wings looking at me. And it was beautiful. And I was thinking, my God, it's an angel. I'm seeing an angel. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful angel. And I'm looking at the being and the being seems aware that I can see it. And suddenly I realized, like, wait, why doesn't this seem like an angel? Like, why does it seem like an angel? And I realized the thing was enjoying the fact that I thought it was beautiful. The thing wanted me to think it was beautiful. And in fact, that's all the thing wanted, was for me to recognize, like, look at this. Look at how powerful, how incredible.
Yeah.
Am I not the greatest? I am the greatest. Am I not? And I think that, to me, is one of the characteristics of that force that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And any body on who is acting like that, the human who wants to be worshipped, we must have compassion for ourselves when we get in that state, or for anyone who is in that state because they're suffering in the most intense, terrible way because they've gotten themselves in this awful situation where they're demanding respect.
Yeah.
They're expecting the glory. They want to feel that they want to be worshipped. Whereas the Christ archetype, there's nothing in it that cares.
Not a shred.
He's not there. No. In the sense of, like, worship me. The thing is always trying as much, not trying even, but the concept is like, it's more about unification.
Yeah.
We're one thing. Or if it's not that, then it's about pointing in the direction of the greater thing, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the difference between Satan and Jesus, is one's pointing to themselves and the other is pointing in the direction of you or the light or love or all things.
Right. And these archetypes are raging inside ourselves at all times, you know, and that's this inner universe that we have mirrors the outer universe, you know? So there's all of these forces. In that same meditation or ceremony, I should say, it wasn't meditation, but in that same ceremony, we started exploring other archetypes, like the Zeus archetype was like a really cool force, this kind of very paternal, fatherly force. And I think the way Hamilton described it was perfect, because a lot of times it's difficult to put these forces into words. You just get a feeling. But he's like, he's the dad who would never let you drive, but if you take the keys and you go out there and you drive, he'll be somewhat proud. He'll, you know, he'll be cool. proud of you. You know, like that's the Zeus archetype. All like right, I'm the cool. father. You don't get the car, but if you go out there and do it, he's like,
that's
my fucking boy. Wow. That's my boy with the car that's ripping around, cool, picking up chicks.
What other archetypes?
I explored the sun. That was an interesting archetype as well. Just this constant pushing of warmth without any judgment or without any decision about who gets the warmth or what gets the warmth. It's just like here, like here.
That's cool.
You know, here is what will sustain life.
Right.
You know, and it's this very, because a lot of times we have this kind of idea of reciprocity of like, I give you this and return this. And I think that's a very fair thing that exists in the universe, but the sun asks for none of that.
Thank God.
Yeah, the sun asks for, you know, it asks for no worship. The people who worship the sun are silly. The sun is not asking for worship because the sun's energy is just give constantly.
If the sun started issuing power bills,
yeah,
we would be fucked
for sure.
There's no way to repay the sun.
No,
ever.
No.
I gotta say though, Matt, the sun worshiper thing. Now, first of all, I do understand why people worship the sun. Like even now when I look at the sun, which I don't very often, you're not supposed to, but even feeling its heat.
Are you not supposed to though? Because I've heard some different things of like,
look, man,
maybe it's actually a little bit helpful, especially with eyes closed.
The eyes closed, perhaps. Yeah. I know you're supposed to absorb the heat of the sun. There's like all kinds of benefits.
Some ways that it helps your melatonin production. Different.
You need to be in the sun.
Yeah. So
there's varying times, but you definitely. Here's what I know for certain: at about 10 a.m., the cat and both dogs go to the exact same part of the house and sunbathe. Yeah. And they love it. And the war between the cats and the dogs is over in that time. They just lay and absorb the sunlight. And you can tell they're getting drunk or high from it. They're just super relaxed. If you pet them, it's like giving someone a massage on MDMA. They just love it, man. So that's just nature gravitating towards absorbing the light. But as far as sun worshiping goes, here's what's wild, man. So, okay, we worship the sun. We'll have a picture of the sun, right? We bow down before it. We imagine it's telling us what to do. People still are fucking sun worshipers. Mm-hmm. It's on your watch. You've converted the periods of light and darkness into a circle that you wear on your fucking wrist, or you put it in the goddamn factory. The workers gaze upon the symbolic representation of the sunlight. And then based on that, all of the pulsations of society are determined.
Yeah.
Everything. So we still worship the sun, man. It didn't stop. It's just now we don't have paintings of the sun. We have a round thing with numbers and lines on it. It's still the fucking sun. A clock is the sun. There's no time. Remove the sun and we've got nothing. There's no time. Yeah. If you get away from the sun, if you get far enough away from the fucking sun, there's no more sunrises. There's no more sunsets. There's no more afternoon siestas. There's just a moment that never stops.
Right.
you know?
Yeah, you see those in those science fiction things, you know, like Pitch Black.
Yes.
You know, where the sun doesn't shine and it's a nightmare the whole time.
That's what it's like.
And then you go somewhere else. Like, I know stepping off the plane in the Sacred Valley in Peru, you step off that plane and you're at 12,000 feet elevation in the Sacred Valley or something like that. Very high. And the sun is just like so dominant in the sky, you know, like you see like where that Inca sun worship came from, because it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like this is fucking something even different when you get to that elevation. It's clear and it's pretty wild.
If you're picking things to worship, picking the massive ball of life-giving light that hovers around your planet is not the worst choice. It certainly is the source of all light.
Yeah.
Anything you've ever thought, anything you've ever eaten, anything you've ever done, you owe it to the sun. And then if you look at the new NASA videos coming of the sun, do you ever watch those close-up crazy fucking when you solar flares, you see that thing, if that thing ain't alive, nothing is. Like, it seems to be alive. These tendrils shooting out of it and rolling back into itself. It seems like a super organism that we just don't understand.
No doubt.
I think it has sentience, goddammit.
It felt like it when I encountered it, for sure. And you know, I think with that sun worship, though, just making sure that you don't get it twisted and think the sun needs that. I mean, the sun doesn't need that.
Right.
You know, I think that's the only place where the sun worship has got off track, is like, we must worship the sun and do sacrifices. No. It's cool. It loves you. It's doing this. It's doing this out of just an altruistic gift for life.
That's right. You know? And that's where you learn the lesson of these archetypes, because I think that where people start getting into trouble is where they become the sun god that wants people to give them sacrifices. Yeah. And that's where you're up shit creek, man. Anytime you've landed in that spot, and it's natural to get there from time to time, if you, you know, if you just become a baby, you know, kids are like that. Like the kid, okay, like when you're toilet training your kid, the kid is, like, wants to be cheered on if it finally manages to shit in the toilet bowl. No great feat, but you need to do it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the kid's going to shit his pants for the rest of his life, right? So you need to cheer the kid on. And it is a big feat for a kid who's been, if for a being who just learned to walk and for the has been shitting his pants regularly to finally manage to not shit your pants for the first time.
Yeah.
How victorious. How liberating it is for, it must be the most liberating thing to realize from now on, I'm not going to have shit in my pants intermittently throughout the day. That's a good feeling. Deserves to be rewarded. So, but the thing is, when adults start wanting the world to congratulate them for not shitting their pants,
yeah,
that's where you get into trouble. Where you start realizing, like, oh, I'm expecting pats on the back. And I'm expecting, you know, you want like a parade around you. You want people to throw fucking ribbons at you, you know, at least once a month, you know,
yeah.
And you start getting addicted to that. That's where you get sick, man. That's where you can start really collapsing.
Because your self-identity and then self-worth gets tied to a relational effect of how much of this adulation you're getting.
Yeah.
And then you're really right. Fucked. So it's like this cascade that starts of wanting it and then needing it. And then when you need it, then there's never enough because it's not actually fulfilling. It's like eating empty calories over and over again, you know, like only having cotton candy, just trying to get full and fuel your muscles with protein. But all it is more and more cotton candy until you just eat it, but continue to get sicker and sicker and sicker. You know?
And it's fascinating because what is a black hole?
Yeah.
What's a black hole? Literally. Do you know what it is?
Something that sucks all light and matter. It's a collapsed
sun.
Yeah.
It's a collapsed sun. When a sun stops giving light out, it falls into itself and it turns into a fucking black hole. In the same way, a person, when you stop this endeavor of like, I'm going to just give it out. You don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. No one deserves it. But I'm just going to give it out. You don't deserve. That's the thing, man. When you get around someone who's really fucked you over, it's a fantastic opportunity to operate as a son. Just for once.
Yep.
And just like, here, take it. Keep taking it. Are you using me? Okay. Use me.
Yeah.
Keep using me. Let's see how much there is of me to be used. How long will it go on for? And when you start doing that, then the planets around you, the beings around you, the things in your presence, they will start growing life. Yeah. They'll start coming to life, just like what happens around the sun. It might not happen with all of them, but man, if you go the opposite direction, I know you and I both must know these people. These poor sons of bitches who have supernovaed and turned into fucking black holes.
Yeah.
And now they've got an orbit of doom around them.
Right.
And anything that gets sucked into it gets ripped to shreds. This is the problem, man. You see it, man. You see it a lot of times.
One black hole will create more collapsed stars, you know, around them who will need that. And they just keep sucking different light and turning more suns into other black holes.
That's right, man. That's it.
You know that, you know, the one drug that I think facilitates that more than anything, cocaine.
You're right.
You know, like I've seen that so many times where like you'll have these people who are a mixed bag. They're part black hole, part sun. They're this swirling of sometimes this outward and sometimes this inward. But reliably, cocaine will get them to the fucking collapse star mode.
Definitely.
Where they just need more. They need more coke. They need more conversation. They need more ejaculation. They just need.
Sucking.
Not. And what they are giving is this crazy, you know, not altruistic, not like, it's a weird, weird thing. So I think watching how these things, what you're surrounding yourself with, making sure that you're not turning to the dark star.
And it, yeah, and when you do turn to the dark star, I think at least you just know it.
Totally.
You know, and I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and she told me, she was telling me that the mind is responsible for, I would say her name, but I don't want to be rude, but I don't know if she, I don't know. But she was telling me the mind is responsible. She believes the mind is responsible for a great many human ailments. And that understanding these things inside of you, that you're a black hole today, or that you've been being a black hole for the last couple of months or years or whatever, just that understanding is all it takes to heal yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't require you to then go in and do some kind of like analysis and fix it. It's just just allowing the thing to emerge into your consciousness is the beginning of the transformation that will happen. So I think if you feel like you're a black hole, that's okay. You have compassion. You got there for a good reason.
Yeah.
You didn't get there because you're evil. You got there because you want love.
Yeah.
You got there because it feels good to be loved, and it feels good to be congratulated, and it feels good to be complimented, and it feels good for people to treat you like you're more special. Right. That does feel good. It's right. Great. Right. We love it. Look at my. I can tell with my sister-in-law picks up my nephew, you know, and holds him, or when my brother holds my nephew, he loves it. Of course you would.
Sure.
So it's, oh, but, and if you've gotten it,
doesn't mean that you shouldn't absorb and appreciate all the love that you get. It's right. Just this matter of whether you need it or whether you can just enjoy it. Like, the need is the attachment, right. Is the fear of not having it creates this desperation, you know, whereas the acceptance of it is just, yeah, like, awesome. Like, breathe it all in. Feel it to the fullest. Yeah. Like, live it with passion.
Yeah.
You know, don't shut yourself off. Oh, I'm worried I'm sucking too much. No, that's part of the gift that creates it and allows you to be right. Energized. But the needing it and the hunting it and the manipulating so that you get it, you know, that is the dark side.
The dark side. And it's based on limitation. Like, right. Imagine if people, all of a sudden, everyone knew that for the next 100 years, a massive iron sphere was going to surround planet Earth and no one would experience the sun. And there was only 4 more hours left to experience sunlight. That'd be a sad 4 hours as people rushed into the streets and desperately tried to experience the sun.
Yeah.
And you'd be so depressed. And you want to figure out a way to bottle it or box it or save it or keep it. And so that's what happens, I think.
That was the fucking Dark Ages. People think about the Dark Ages as dark because of, you know, the thoughts and the different things that were going on. No, it was actually fucking dark.
What?
They actually have geological records that show that the time at that point was dark because of volcanic activity and different other things.
No shit.
The Dark Ages were actually dark.
What?
Yeah, you can look it up. I actually tweeted it not too long ago, but the Dark Ages were dark.
No.
And that was
way.
One of the reasons why it was such a fucked up time, as the sun was largely gone. It was cloudy every goddamn day.
Whoa.
You know, and which facilitates disease, which Whoa. Facilitates all of these other fucked up things, like the sun withdrew.
That's wild.
And in all of these like post-apocalyptic fantasies, like you see in Matrix 3, they're all underground and shit. You know, can you imagine not having to, not being able to experience the sun? I was actually thinking of writing a novel with the first line being, "Grandpa, tell me again about the sun."
Right.
You know, like just the old wise ones were the only one. Ah, yes. It was this glowing orb of light. And when it bathed across your skin, it tickled and filled you with warmth. And you'd be drunk from vitamins that could only blossom in your skin from the light of this giant orb.
Whoa.
Like, whoa, Grandpa, was it real? Yes, my son, it was
Don't
real.
Listen to your grandpa. He hasn't had his medication. There was never a...
Yeah, and then there'd be people who'd be sun deniers.
Yeah. Oh, shut up. You don't believe in the fucking sun, do you? There's no proof it ever existed. It's a yeah. bunch of assholes from the past who made some shit up. Trust me, there's no fucking sun. Yeah, man. No, it's the best way out of being a black hole, if you find yourself in a super compressed state of need, is to, you have to just start giving to people.
Yep.
That's it. If you even though you don't feel like it.
You have to start being a son yourself. You have to awaken your own son.
Yeah.
And then internally that son in your heart, nine layers deep, deep, deep in your heart, which is a son.
Why do you say nine layers deep?
It's just a way to envision all of the dimensional layers that their heart actually exists in, you know. And for me, nine layers is the amount in the shamanic tradition. Nine layers is the ninth layer is God, pure unification and oneness. So it goes through the layers. Obviously, fourth is time, fifth is dream, sixth is this place of entities, more like the astral. Seventh is starting to get into the celestial. Eighth is a place of pure potentiality. That's kind of very much, pretty much the highest that any shaman can access. And then ninth is just unification, pure unification with the oneness of all life.
What's the first layer?
Well, one, two, three. One is a dot. Two is a line. Three is, you know, the regular dimensions apply.
Okay.
Three is 3D space. Four is time. Fifth is dreams, the world of dreams, which is somewhere below the astral. The astral is the projected visionary state of, you know, of things, which is somewhere, you know, around the sixth. And then seventh is the celestial, more angelic beings in there. And then eighth is that dimension of potentiality.
And this is inside a human.
This is inside us, as well as within, so without, as above, so below.
Whoa.
You know, what Hermes Trismegistus says, that's inside us. We have a universe connected to the other universe, which is all part of a multiverse. And it's all this matter of, you know, you can look at it in any different way you want, but in our heart,
yeah,
in our heart is that point of ninth dimension. It is pure sun, pure God, a ninth dimensional point that is our seat of consciousness.
Yeah.
And so anchoring to that, that is the medicine space that I was talking about from Hamilton Souther. It's like, that's what he identified is that's our piece of God that we have inside.
Okay.
So that's why I say nine layers deep to that piece of God that we all have, that innate sun that is just willing to give and will warm us out from within. So giving to somebody is like waking that up. It's like, here, I'm going to be the sun. And then all of a sudden, like a quantum particle, you know, you can see it when you observe it, but if you don't observe it, it may not be there. You know, like the rules of quantum physics will have that observer effect where observing it actually manifests it. And that's the way it is with our heart. Observing that point in our heart and giving it that ability to do what it's capable of, which is love unconditionally, then at that point, you know, we are the sun. And that's the best way out of being a black hole, for sure.
Cool, man. That's so cool. Like, yeah, you can almost just see it inside of you, this, like, super luminous, perfect light that's just covered in shit.
Yeah. It's just not there because we're choosing not to see it.
Right.
It's just a choice. We're choosing on the quantum level not to acknowledge the God that's in our heart. You know, the oneness of all life, of all creation that's there. And then as soon as we do, as soon as we acknowledge that and acknowledge that that's connected to all things through perpetual motion, everything moving, once that becomes a particle that's real, it's connected to all of the atomic movement of all of our cells in our body, connected to all the atomic movement of all the atoms in the air, connected to all the atomic movement of entire space and planets and everything. It's all connected. And then at that point, you're in the medicine space.
Wow. Aubrey, you're the coolest of all time.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man.
For sure, man.
How can people find you?
Yeah, so aubreymarcus.com is the hub. All my social is Aubrey Marcus. You can check me out there. On the website, though, is some cool things, some binaural beats, which are great. It's a cool technology to entrain your brain waves to reach different states, and also a guided meditation using that sacred silence anchor breath technique, and the meditation's totally free. So check it out. Let me know what you think, and appreciate the shit out of you.
I appreciate the shit out of you. Thanks, Aubrey.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this episode, why not give us a nice rating on iTunes? Bookmark our Amazon portal, and much thanks to Wearspace.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to Wearspace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your purchase. See you guys next time. Hare Krishna. Become the sun. Bye. Here's a track from the Sun Days. It's called I Keep On Wondering. I'll have a link to the album at DuncanTrussell.com in the comment section of this podcast, or you can go to thesun-days.bandcamp.com. Okay, see you guys later. Bye.